This is BDO in the Boardroom, a podcast by the BDO Center for Corporate Governance for the Board of Directors and those charged with governance. We're joined by your board peers and inspiring leaders to discuss the trending and timeless issues that are impacting today's boardroom agendas. Let's get started.
Hey, welcome to BDO in the Boardroom. I'm Amy Rojic, Director of BDO's Center for Governance, and I'm so happy to have the chance to sit down with Kelly Slava to discuss how artificial intelligence, or AI, can be intentionally utilized to operationalize, grow, and scale in a young yet high-growth company. But before we begin, a little about our guest today. Kelly is the Corporate Secretary, Head of Corporate Development, and General Counsel at Seeka AI, a Silicon Valley Series D healthcare tech SaaS startup. She has served as the Chief Compliance Officer on boards of LLCs and private companies, and worked in all-size companies from the non-for-profit ASPCA to the multinational corporations Reckitt and General Electric. As an early adopter of technology and AI in particular, Kelly brings a unique perspective on scaling appropriate governance to us today. So Kelly, welcome to BDO in the Boardroom.
Thank you, Amy. Happy to be here.
All right. Well, my first question is if you could please walk me through the switch from your general counsel work at a well-established consumer health and hygiene company with a portfolio of name brands to being now an advisor to startup companies.
Thanks. Yeah, the strategy for a well-established brand and a new brand, as well as the governance strategy for a well-established company and a new startup company, are different in some key ways. So this is a great question. Before and after and during my general counsel work at Reckitt and GE, I was advising startup company founders, both in my pro bono work and as an advisory board director. So to me, becoming the GC of a startup was an application of an IP protection strategy just to a newer brand. And with a portfolio of well-established brands, it's a different strategy because consumers recognize the brand, like Lysol and Mucinex at the UK consumer products company Reckitt, for those of your listeners that aren't as familiar with it, and are seeing your products on the store shelves or out in the market in the case of GE's large industrial products that you didn't see on store shelves. So the strategy was product innovation and thus brand extensions to leverage the existing brand recognition. A good example is Lysol for disinfecting surfaces that was then expanded into Lysol air sanitizer for disinfecting and eliminating odors in the air. A bad example is Mucinex unsuccessfully expanding into Mucinex allergy despite the fact that the brand was a well-recognized brand. And it's yet a different strategy with a well-established brand that has evolved during its 140-year existence, which was the ASPCA when I worked there. With animal welfare industry, what I'm calling startups like PETA and the Humane Society that hadn't been around for the 140 years, not even close, donors and sponsors were looking for a differentiation among the organizations to decide where their money would be best spent to align with their beliefs. Prevention of cruelty and a focus on companion animals was the successful strategy that the ASPCA adopted. And at startups, you're right that it's another strategy building a brand from the ground up. It involves working with the founders to be clear on the messaging of what their company and brand stands for, then protecting their IP and developing strategies that strengthen claims and identify marketplace differentiators. So for me, making the switch required the biggest strategy shift as to governance, though. My previous companies were product manufacturing companies, Amy, and I was moving to a SaaS company, which SaaS is software as a service, and that's the product. So with my strong technology background and having worked in an e-commerce business that had a subscription business model similar to a SaaS model, which is monthly recurring revenue and annual recurring revenue but business model, there is a significant overlap as to the business models. However, governance has shifted for me from a focus on risk management within the supply chain and setting up governance to prevent what could go wrong there to a focus on risk management of a data breach and setting up governance to protect what could go wrong there, especially because we manage healthcare data. And governance has also shifted for me from a focus on risk management of injury to humans who ingest manufactured products, baby formula like Enfamil and over-the-counter health products like Mucinex when I was at Reckitt, to a focus on risk management of non-compliance with HIPAA as to patient health information, PCI as to credit card holder data, FCRA as to medical scores data, and NIST as to protection cybersecurity standards. So governance has really been the biggest shift for me.
Yeah, and I can see from how you outline each of the various industries you've touched, it becomes a very challenging aspect to really understand the ins and outs of risk management in each of those industries. So Let's see, you touched on the incredible interest today in AI. So maybe you can share the approach for embracing artificial intelligence, Gen AI, in the environment of a startup company where speed and scale is paramount. And I realize those two things are very different. But also the governance frameworks may necessarily be top of mind amid the blocking and tackling to operationalize and optimize ready for market products.
Yes, there's incredible interest by businesses in AI today. And for those of us who were dreaming of agentic AI 15 plus years ago and have been early adopters of pre-AI and AI, agentic AI for me is something that is really going to make human life better. But again, I think it needs to be with the right guardrails and the right parameters. So as someone with a passion for uncovering value in businesses and for operationalizing synergies and efficiencies, AI is really helping us drive cost savings, but it's also helping us drive revenues. So it's both a reactive and a proactive application to growing businesses. And really, shouldn't all businesses be, I'm doing air quotes here for your listeners, growing businesses, you know, if they plan to survive? You know, the truth is that the world is figuring out what an AI policy should look like. Countries are proposing principles and guidelines in an attempt to orient the governance of a global AI framework. And the question is whether the framework will move quickly enough to provide adequate safeguards, especially given the political aspects of its adoption, along with the breakneck pace that AI is growing at. So in small organizations that I've worked for, using AI is really out of necessity and survival to use, you know, technology precursor to any type of AI and et cetera. It's just technology in general. And we are using machine learning and computers to do things. It was adopted mostly because there was a lack of resources. But as I learned at the ASPCA, you know, technology also has costs due to lack of resources. And the technology costs there were always questions against the background of, well, how many spay neuters could this organization do instead of spending the money on that? So you're constantly justifying your use of the cost of technologies too. It's the same as using AI now, as far as I'm concerned, because so much of it is free at this moment. It's a necessity for small organizations like nonprofits and startups to get creative in resourcing. So I think that's why you're seeing some of us being more of the early adopters. But, you know, as you know, Amy, it's the balance of ensuring you're not making mistakes that will lead to the downfall of the organization. You don't want to be so fast, so speedy as you're scaling up that you're making mistakes with your compliance and governance. And certainly that's where compliance and governance need to have a seat at that table. So I agree that governance frameworks are not top of mind in small organizations and startups that struggle for survival and chasing resources and investors are most focused on. However, what every single founder and startup is focused on is growth. And growth, which is also known as scaling and operationalizing, I think can only be done successfully within the right culture and governance framework that supports that growth. I think there becomes a point where doing everything as a one-off, customized, personalized approach is simply impossible as the startup grows. And this is usually the tipping point for putting processes into place, which include, you know, putting governance into place if there's none, or certainly strengthening that governance. So my approach on compliance and governance is to work with the executive team to always be reminding them to consider what an investor or a regulator would be looking at. This applies to startups, and it's successful when scaled appropriately. An entire compliance department is not a must-have, but a top-down reinforced culture of compliance certainly is, and that includes governance. So from this, my approach for embracing AI is to consider AI as another aspect of risk to be considered in making business decisions. What is the business risk if we use AI? What is the business risk if we don't use AI and fall behind our competitors? What is the risk of using AI for this particular pain point in this particular small use case at my particular company? Best practices in governance is certainly to have an AI use policy, which to the extent that if they're not already asking for it, your business partners, you know, certainly will be. So I'd say in operationalizing AI, consider the internal uses as well as the external uses. Of the internal use cases, I've had AI used to streamline customer service functions and human resources, talent searches, and IT maintenance issues, and certainly legal department basic contract generation. And of external use cases, I've had AI be a sage, so to speak, used by a customer for its internal business, like an intranet or a chatbot on steroids, and also embedded as a new feature in products to help predict and forecast optimizations. That's where I think AI can really go out there and pull a lot of data together and be doing predictive models for us.
Now, those are great examples. I think, you know, each of them we could probably spend hours dismantling and talking about the opportunities and risks. But maybe we can cover that broadly in, I guess, what has presented the most challenges in AI implementation and adoption? And I guess, what are you discovering as opportunities that you may not have identified prior to using AI?
Yeah, so I would say the most challenges in AI implementation and adoption could be summed up in two words: risk tolerance. With all new technology, at first there's ignorance, and then we get educated, so there's less ignorance. And I think that implementing AI frees humans to do higher level brain work and make gut feeling decisions and use empathy to read a room when negotiating, as just a few examples, which are more challenging and more fun for humans. And so to me, AI is helping us advance society because humans will be doing that higher level work that we're then able to outsource, so to speak, to the AI to be doing the more general level work. So to your question of the opportunities I'm discovering that I may not have identified prior to using AI, I would say that's evolving for me. Initially, in both my professional and my personal life, and I know we both have a number of kids, it was to relieve a pain point. So it was reactive. No time to update what new products your competitors are launching. Great. Let's have AI do that research for you. No resources to track the most recent developments in laws or regulations for X or Y or Z, have AI monitor it for you. Kids keep forgetting to write on your shopping list the food items you're out of, have them tell AI verbally, and then even better, have the reorders done automatically. You know, confusing home project, have AI find the easiest directions with videos for you. So I think for me, there have been a lot of applications so far, both professionally and personally, and I'm constantly, you know, looking for other ones or going to different workshop groups that I talk, you know, with other people that are early adopters, other peoples that are trying to find new use cases, and going to conferences and certainly talking with the people at Cica.ai. We think about this every single day, all day long, is looking for these new opportunities, which I really do think are evolving for all of us. Those were some reactive opportunities that I mentioned, but I think the truly discovering, exciting discoveries are being made in how to proactively use AI, use it to predict your next medical procedure, to make suggestions to you. Yes, you know, these are being done now. And the use of agentic AI, for which strong governance in setting the appropriate parameters, you know, enabling proactive actions by your avatar agent, is, I think, the next level in opportunities. I think it's very exciting to think, just in my personal life, that, you know, my agentic AI is going to remember that it's, you know, someone's birthday, and that I can give them parameters, go buy this type of product for this amount of money and use, you know, this credit card, and, you know, then send it directly to them and put this in the note that goes in there. I love the idea of that. And I know, Amy, that you travel quite a bit on business also. So for you, you could be doing this from anywhere, and it would just make all of our lives, I think, a lot easier. And it leaves our brain power, again, the human brain power, to do higher level things. So I find it extremely exciting just thinking about the evolution of how humankind and myself personally are going to be using this both professionally and personally.
Thank you, Kelly. And just to make sure our audience understands what agentic AI is, I think everyone's talked about AI, generative AI. My understanding is that agentic AI allows for better operationalizing the company. Is that right?
Yes, I agree. I think of it in the simplest way as being the more proactive form of AI. You Got set it. The appropriate governance and parameters for it, and it sort of proactively goes and does things. You know, equate it to, I think, when you get those great push notifications that we get right now. It's not quite AI, but those type of proactive reminders are the things that agentic AI is going to be able to actually implement and carry out for you. And that's extremely exciting, I think, for businesses and certainly for personal life as well.
Yes, I think we all can use that agentic AI as a personal assistant to keep us on track and moving in the right direction. So maybe the last question I'll pose to you today, and I would love to have you back and dive deep into a lot of the things you were talking about previously, but what are you learning in real time from this process that you might think would be helpful to those charged with governance, the board, who may be amid similar activities or contemplating overseeing the furtherance of AI usage at their respective organizations?
Yeah, it's a great question to end on. I would say those charged with governance are really helping to shape humanity's future in a way never before possible. AI is here to stay. We know that now. And now is the time to figure out what the appropriate framework is, the appropriate governance is, that's going to enable businesses to grow without it being to the detriment of humans and society. And I think that's where a lot of the fear is coming in now. The Federal Trade Commission and Delaware courts have taken positions that may lead boards to oversee AI as a part of company operations. And audit committees, as I'm sure you know, are viewing AI as a risk element for companies that they'll be monitoring. So I believe that boards of directors are best positioned to ask their companies how they're using AI to drive strategy, who is responsible within the organization for AI, instead of everybody thinking someone else is responsible for it, for compliance with emerging regulations, how AI will be funded, and to ask if the policies for its use are adequate. And those are going to need to be revisited and sort of tweaked along the way as they're being developed. You know, whole nations can't figure this out. Certainly every business is going to be figuring it out as they go along also. And the last thing I would say is that in low risk tolerance organizations, I believe that the culture will need to be educated that the benefits of using AI outweigh the risks. We go back to risk tolerance and risk analysis again, which is so much of governance and so much of business. And I think this is where a small test and learn project using AI would be really beneficial. And ideally with a quantifiable benefit that you can then take back to management and to boards. You know, how much money did you save? How much money did you make? You know, how much in a person's time did you save? And what did you direct that to instead? Was there an ROI on what you diverted that person's attention to instead? And I think those charged with governance that don't feel equipped to advise on AI usage. And I hear this a lot. People say, I don't know that I know enough about it. How could I be advising on this? I encourage them to attend one of the many, many educational opportunities in AI that are available. I constantly see online classes for free from very reputable organizations. And I see many, many conferences with industry leaders there who have certainly a lot more experience and a lot more use cases that they can share than most of the people in the audience. That's why going to those conferences is so beneficial. And I think from that, you educate yourself and then you can think about how to apply that to your specific business. But the education piece of it, I think, is really critical right now. And certainly for the cultures that have a very low risk tolerance, there's going to be a certain need to get people's comfort level higher before AI is going to be adopted widespread inside of those organizations.
No, I fully agree with you. And I think the independent director really has an obligation to be thinking outside of the box here and doing just as you said, providing themselves with continual education, you know, and trying to encourage their fellow board members to do the same. So I see a lot of better practices evolving in the boardroom with relationships to just that. So Kelly, I really appreciate your thoughts today. You know, you gave us a lot to think about in a short amount of time, and I just want to thank you and invite you back for more in the future if you're so obliged.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you to you and to BDO for inviting me to join today. And if any of your listeners want to continue the discussion with me, the easiest place to reach me, I guess, is on LinkedIn. And Amy, I'd love to further discuss this with you here or anywhere else.
All right. Well, thank you, Kelly. And thank you to our listeners. Please tune in for more BDO in the Boardroom episodes. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to BDO in the Boardroom. If you like the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions about what we discussed today, reach out to us via BDO.com, where you can also access the resources cited in this episode and learn more about the BDO Center for Corporate Governance. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO.